Hello and welcome to The Shape of Work, a podcast series by SpringWorks. My name is Anoop and I am your host. Each week, we'll be talking to top people managers across the world on the future of work and how it's shaping our workplace. So sit back and get ready to find out more from these movers and shakers as we have a no-holds-barred, anything-goes conversation with them about their journey, their insights, their thoughts, and most importantly, their ideas and vision for the workplace of the future. Join in on the conversation, leave a comment, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button.
Hello everyone, welcome to The Shape of Work, and today as our guest we have Suhail Wodgaonkar, who is the head of HR at Deserve. Hi Suhail, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me here.
That's great, Suhail. So, you know, where are you currently based out of?
Nikita, I'm right now in Bangalore, but otherwise I've been in Pune. I've spent most of the pandemic over there. My family's over there. I have recently moved to Deserve, but my last company was remote. And even at Deserve, our teams are split between Mumbai and Bangalore.
Great. So before we begin with the podcast, you know, why don't we set a base for our listeners? Help us with your career journey so far.
Okay, absolutely. So I have a slightly, you know, different career trajectory that I've taken. I started off my career with hotels. I was a hotelier with ITC Hotels. Did my hotel management, graduated in 2008, joined as a management trainee. I wanted to be a chef, but you know, during my training, I realized that, okay, maybe I don't necessarily want to be in the kitchen. I want to be in a more customer facing role. So I did F&B operations and then eventually sales, worked at a different bunch of properties at IPC, was part of the opening team of the Gardenia in Bangalore. And then in 2015, I joined a very early stage company at that time. Today, it's a huge renowned startup called Urban Company. That time it was called Urban Clap. I joined so early that we were only 9 people, and started out with the mandate of building the customer experience operation. Because I came from a very customer-centric, customer-focused industry, I think they wanted someone who came from that background, and hence I landed up over there. That was my first tryst with tech and startups, and I've always been someone who's feared tech because I'm not an engineer. But you know, I think it was serendipity that I just got caught up in it. UC was, you know, a great learning platform. I built out customer experience. I handled the brand, and eventually I moved into the people function 2 years ago. And I was leading talent acquisition and HR business partnering. Moved out of Urban Company late last year. I just needed a break. Startups are intense. You tend to burn out. Burnout is very real, and I needed a break. And I also wanted to get back into the early stage game, right? I think there's a different thrill that you get in building companies from scratch and seeing them, you know, blossom into unicorns or multi-unicorns, right? So, and that's how I came to Deserve. I interacted with the Deserve founders through our investors for some knowledge sharing, and I really liked the team at Deserve. Very grounded, great ideas. I think solving a very real problem for our generation, you know, aligned with their vision, and that's how I came into this organization.
That's quite a journey from being a hotelier to, you know, people, HR. That's quite a journey you had, Suhail. I wish you all the success for the future endeavors as well.
Thank you so much.
Since we begin with, you know, talking about the pandemic, how you spend your time in Pune and Bangalore, the prolonged crisis has severely impacted the employee well-being. What can the employers do differently to bring about a meaningful and sustainable shift in the wellness quotient, according to you?
I think the way wellness is looked at has also evolved over the course of this pandemic, right? Initially, the reason why all the companies started working from home is they were very fearful about the spread of the virus in an office space, right? That one person gets it, everyone will get it. You'll have teams that are completely down. right? So from a business, I think it was more of a business decision, along with like a safety, because, you know, initially also the death rate was very low, right? Even when the first wave hit India, the death rate was still low. I think then the real fear around safety and overall loss happened in the second wave, when we actually started, you know, when it hit closer home and people started to lose members of their family. And, you know, there were, I mean, some of us even lost colleagues, right? I think the fear around safety and just, you know, mortality set in. So that was a significant shift. It became very real in the second wave. And, you know, now, and what happened was that the whole sort of push towards mental health also started to happen around that time, right? Because one is, of course, initially people were isolated. They were alone, right? People were in different cities because we went lockdown and, you know, people were stuck, etc. So they were like, they were alone, and that had a psychological impact. Again, in the second wave, then, you know, it was people started to lose their loved ones, right? People were dying around us, and the psychological impact of that was very different. So overall, I think the way companies looked at health, wellness was, of course, there was a lot of focus on mental well-being, right? And there was, you know, we saw some companies do some great work, right? Where they introduced free therapy, you know, there was always, you know, a buddy on call. They started to pair people together, or you had like a you know, caregiver within this leadership who you could reach out to. And that person was not necessarily your manager. You know, we did a lot of these things in my last organization. And then the, you know, when the focus sort of moved to real psychological safety in terms of, you know, being alive or not, or, you know, having gone through the loss of someone loved, again, that evolved, right? Then you were doing a lot more sharing, right? You were having these open forums where you were getting people, you were allowing people the chance to be vulnerable, letting them know that, hey, you're not alone. We're all going through the same thing, right? I think sharing and giving people the opportunities and avenues to get the right psychological and medical care have been the big shifts in the way companies operate, right? That I do feel has seen some evolution, but that's here to stay now.
That's a good insight for 2021. What do you think would be, you know, the key learnings that you might drive your people strategies with in 2022?
So, see, that's what I said, right? This is here to stay now, right? I think the stigma of mental well-being, or, you know, earlier it was, you know, talking about therapy didn't exist, right?
Correct.
Nobody used to talk about therapy. No one would say, I take therapy. I think now that has changed. That narrative has changed. Now people are being very open, right? They're saying that, hey, this is having a mental impact. This is having an impact on my mental health. And it could be any situation, right? And companies should be able to give a solution to that, right? So I do feel that the ability for people to talk about how things affect their psychological well-being is here to stay. The way companies address these issues and also talk about them more openly is here to stay. Most companies are going to adopt a hybrid way of working, which means that some people are going to be remote, some people are not going to be, some people want to come to the office, they're going to be given a choice. One thing that's going to be, I think, hard for all companies is how not to differentiate between employees who are in the office and those who are. If you've given them a choice, then you cannot differentiate, right? That's going to be a tough one. And I think that's where, you know, a lot of HR business partnership is going to be required. I do think that the pandemic has now sort of propelled the HR function to be front and center, right? And look, I moved into the HR function during the pandemic, right? I moved in for a business reason. So I know the importance of distributing this work, right, between business leaders and HR leaders. But it's going to be very important to ensure that cohesiveness between remote employees and non-remote employees happens.
Since we are already talking on the font of, you know, hybrid work culture, I have another question for you. With employee experience taking center stage in the age of digital and hybrid work, what are some of the challenges that are likely to turn up, apart from the performance metrics that you just mentioned?
So one is this, right? Like I said, it is going to be very hard to not differentiate between employees who are physically around you. And I'm talking about a manager, like any manager who has a team that is mixed, which has people who are remote and non-remote. The natural bias is going to be that, hey, I share a relationship with the person I meet every day versus the person I meet on Zoom, right? So I think that is definitely going to be a big challenge, which leaders will have to be very conscious about. Right? In fact, I feel that's going to be the biggest challenge. Because, you know, what happens is come appraisals, come performance reviews, this will creep into the way you perceive people, right? And that's going to reflect in their performance reviews. I think that's one piece that's going to be, important. And it's not going to be easy to solve for, right? We are human beings at the end of the day. The second thing is, it's also about the business, right? Employee experience directly, you know, translates to, you know, better business outcomes, right? And I think it's important to sort of work backwards also, that what is it going to take the business to succeed, right? And then how do you sort of drive your people strategy? Rather than sort of basing your people strategy and then looking at business outcomes. I think a lot of companies, what happens is that HR function, you know, comes up with a people strategy. There is a business strategy, and both are not necessarily talking to each other. I think it's important for HR functions to align very closely with the business, right? Understand deeply what the business strategy is and base their people strategy on that. This, I feel, has to be like a very sort of clear and conscious agenda that is driven by every leader of any organization. I think employee experience, you know, has to be measurable. One thing we did a lot was constantly measure what employee experience is. We used NPS as a metric, which was very helpful. And there was a target for every business partner to move to, you know, drive up their functional NPS, right? But employee experience is actually very broad, because what happens is for some teams, it is, you know, what they want, what they're looking for is appreciation, right? For some teams, it was, and it also depends on the level. For some teams, it was, or some levels, it was that we were just spending so much of time in meetings. So calendar management was an important lesson that people needed, right? And an intervention, just calendar management, right? Imagine telling teams that, hey, you can't have more than six or five or six meetings in a day, right? Then also time off, that, hey, if you are off, how do we ensure that nobody's calling, right? So there are small things which, you know, small interventions that are needed, which is the perception that is overall employee experience. But there are larger things also, right? Like now you see ESOPs, compensation has become such a big talking point right now, because there is so much of attrition, companies are hemorrhaging talent, there is so much of money in the market, so there are no bands anymore, right? Compensation is through the roof. So I do feel like employee experience is too broad a topic. I feel like for different companies at different stages, you have to base your people strategy on your business strategy, and not the other way around. Both are not mutually exclusive of each other. They are very integrated, and then take it from there.
That makes sense. That definitely makes sense. So, you know, when we are talking about barriers that can happen with these different strategies, there is another question that's there in my mind. What are some workplace barriers to implementing employee learning during these volatile times? What's your plan to overcome them?
I think learning is one of the biggest offerings you can give to an employee, after, you know, having done a lot of interviewing and recruitment, people join another company for the learning opportunity more than compensation, right? It's learning that's the biggest sort of driver to join a company, followed by culture, and then followed by compensation, right? So you can't ever discount learning, and that's what I really that's what I feel that every leader needs to think about, right? That are their teams learning enough, and not just their immediate reportees, but everyone down the line. And this is a slightly double-edged sword, because you only learn when you're pushing yourself, right? When you're doing something that is out of your comfort zone, which means that you could be, you know, you could be in a team that is being pushed for your own self-learning. I do feel that, like, a lot of leaders right now in this situation might feel that, hey, we can't push our teams, we can't push our team members, because they leave, right? But it's important to communicate this, that, look, your learning is important to me. And hence, you know, we want to ensure that you're thinking out of the box. We as leaders, we should not be solutioning. We should be getting the solution out of the people in our teams, right? And that's where I say, you know, you're pushing them to think, you're pushing them to act differently, you're pushing them to raise the bar constantly, right? But I think it has to be done in a you have to be very communicative about this. So your communication has to be absolutely clear. The other thing is that also giving them time and space to get some external learning, right? Companies are making LinkedIn Learning available to their employees. They're making courses available, etc. So, you know, in performance, and look, you can't spoon feed people, right? You have to give them the space and expect them to be able to do it on their own. But I think it's also important to, you know, when you assess people at the end of the quarter or at the end of the half year, you should also ask them, what external learning have you done? And if the answer is no, then in the plan for them for the next half year, you build this in, right? And hold yourself accountable. While you're not going to be necessarily doing the course or program to teach them, you're ensuring that you're at least giving them the time and space to do it.
Ultimately, it is important to upskill and learn every day.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the unfortunate truth with remote working is that a lot of learning happens when you interact with different team members, right? You know, those coffee conversations, you go to the pantry, you're just asking people, hey, what are you doing? You're spending time with different people. Remote working, unfortunately, has taken that away. And, you know, even that needs to be program managed, but it's so much nicer having a conversation in person than doing it over Zoom, right? So that's why leaders have to be more mindful about this now, that people are learning. Because if they don't learn, they will leave. That is for sure.
Professional development is important.
Absolutely. Professional, and, you know, it could also mean that someone is just learning a language, right? But you're giving them the space to do it.
Correct. So in your opinion, what are the cornerstones of building an, you know, inclusive and high-performing digital work culture, since we are already talking about Zoom?
So here's where recruitment teams play a very key role, right? I do feel that a lot of our recruitment is done reactively more than proactively. It's only at a leadership level where are you really sort of investing time and figuring out the right person to bring into that role, right? I think one important step is to invest in a recruitment team that is working proactively as well as reactively. And so what does that mean, right? Reactive is there are open roles because someone has left, etc. And the way attrition is now, you're always going to be behind the curve. You'll never have enough people. Every team will say, mujhe log chahiye. You know, teams are scrambling to hire for that. But you also need to have a dedicated team that is active on, that is working on proactive hiring, right? And this is where you want to invest in bringing diversity. And by diversity, I don't just mean that having people, you know, with who having, you know, a certain male female ratio, or having, you know, employees from the LGBTQ cohort, etc. It generally means that just having people who bring in divergent thought, right? Like, let me give you an example. You have a product team, right? Product teams generally are made up of product managers who come from different companies where they have been product managers, right? So they may have, they might have been associate product managers, here they are product managers. But I think it's important for teams to think about bringing in different kind of people. Like, you can have, you can hire a couple of people who come from consumer product companies, right? You can have people who grow internally into the product team, right? So in our case, they come from the investing team, or they come from the engineering team, right? You can have, you can be hiring directly from management consulting firms, right? And then you also like bring in people from different sort of tech backgrounds altogether, right? You hire people from B2B SaaS companies, right? Because what happens is that divergent thought on the table brings in a lot of that might be some friction, right? But it just broadens the horizon and the way your business is built, because then you have a very 360 perspective, right? And that is important for any successful business. So when you have a proactive recruitment team, they are already looking at the existing pool, the base of employees, and saying, okay, we already have these kind of people. Now let's look for slightly different people. Let's look for people from different backgrounds, right? Like, can we hire people from fashion for the product team, right? And of course, like, it's important to have a good mix of, men and women in any organization. So if you know there are teams where, your female employee base is low, then you are, consistently working towards increasing it. And that's where proactive recruitment teams really help. Yeah, that's what I feel like it, that's how you can effectively work on diversity. Otherwise, it never happens, because you're just firefighting.
It's the different point of views that matter in, building up the products and the services.
Absolutely. Most companies, they might have I've seen companies have a very large female consumer base, but like an all male engineering team, right? So you are building tools or you're building products for a female consumer. You don't know. Only a female knows what a female consumer needs, right? If she is a consumer. So yeah, I think that thought is important, and understand, and having a, an employee base that mimics your consumer base.
Right. So I think, Sohail, we have reached the end of our podcast. It was great having a conversation with you today. So if our listeners, if they want to connect with you, how do you think they can do the same?
I'm on LinkedIn, right? So they can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm also on Instagram. My handle is @sideplease. I'm not so active on Twitter, but I think LinkedIn is definitely the easiest way to do so.
Definitely. That was great having you, Sohail, and we look forward to recording more such conversations with you. Thank you.
Absolutely. I'd love to do that in the future. Hopefully, I would have done a little more work on the people side at Deserve. I think this year is going to be very interesting, because I think we're close to the end of the pandemic. I'm keeping my fingers crossed here. And now, once we're out of it, I think there'll be a lot of evolution in the way companies operate and teams operate, right? So it'll be interesting to see how this year lands.
Right. All right. Thank you for your insight, Sohail.
Thank you so much. Bye. It was lovely talking to you.